Good morning. Welcome to Senate Special Committee on Revenue. I apologize to my colleagues for the delay in opening the meeting.
Get an ink.
We have...
I've been branded.
We have posted for 9 a.m., and as is quite often the case in special legislative session, we string out our paperwork supply lines a little bit, so drafts sometimes come to us warm from the copier, and that's the case this morning. Also, I will again just iterate the chair's intention that posted agendas be circulated to all the members as soon as they are available. We've had a little difficulty getting the documents out to our members, not because of any deficiency of our staff in legislative revenue, but in fact, often the decision-making process happens immediately before we post and drop the gap. So we're going to try and just have those meetings earlier and get our stuff posted earlier and let all the members know what bills we'll be considering during the hearing. And that'll just make things a little bit easier.
And there is some public concern, so as soon as that can be posted for everybody, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think that often we assume that the public understands that special sessions are on an emergency basis, but I don't think they often understand that that means that we move quickly, and sometimes that's a great opportunity for public input on our actions. Any questions?
Well, we do still post.
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we're supposed to do that, yeah. But our rules have allowed us to post and meet at the call of the chair, which in some cases will be pulled off the floor to do these things. Okay, we have on the agenda today work sessions for House Bill 4050, House Bill 4052, House Bill 4056, House Bill, and Senate Bill 1021. We also are having a public hearing, possible work session on SJR 51, and we have posted on our agenda a status update on Senate Bill 1022. That is simply to announce that the chairs decided not to concur with Senate Bill 1022. And that would push that draft into a conference committee. So let's go ahead and begin our work session. We'll open with House Bill 4050. Let's open the work session on House Bill 4050. That, colleagues, as you remember, is the bill that extends or removes the sunset and extends the sunset for the 911 Emergency Communications Act. And we'll have Mr. Yates to explain the purpose and need for the bill, and turn it over to the committee for any deliberations or discussion. Morning, Mr. Yates.
Morning, Chair. Members, Dick Yates, Legislative Revenue. I think the Chair actually did the explanation on the bill. It does one thing, and that is to extend the sunset from January 1 of 2004 to January 1 of 2007 with respect to the telecommunications tax, which is 75 cents per month per line for access to 911. This provides additional revenue essentially to make sure that the increase in the technology essentially related to this service, and in particular with the tracking of cell phones to be able to determine the location from which the call is made, and also with respect to the consolidation of PSAPs. And as the revenue impact indicates for the 2003-2005 biennium, we're talking about $16.8 million in new revenue, and then for the 2005-2007 biennium, $52.88 million in additional revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Yates. Do the committee members have any questions about 4050? House Bill 4050.
On the 911.
Yes.
Do we have anyone to testify on what the money is going to be used for in the future?
We have been offered testimony. Why don't we make that part of the public?
I'd like to hear what they're. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that we're intending to take some of the 911 money, I want to know what they're going to do in the future with it.
Can I bring up Ms. Squires, please, this evening? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Hasina Squires, appearing today on behalf of the Oregon APCO NENA National Emergency Number Association. I would be happy to explain to you what the purpose of the 911 tax is. Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, would you like a complete explanation of where the 75 cents goes to, or?
Well, just generally, what you're planning to do with it in the future. Why are we continuing this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, currently, of the 75 cents per line access charge, 57.5% of those revenues are distributed on a per capita basis to cities and counties to operate, to provide partial funding for the operation and maintenance of the 911 system. It accounts to approximately 20% of each local PSAP's budget. So that's where, of course,
20% of their operating budget?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The rest of the operating budget is funded at the local level via property taxes and user fees.
Okay.
The other large portion of the tax is used, 35% of that is used to fund the enhanced 911 service that the state of Oregon currently has implemented. The Federal Communications Commission has requested all states to implement what's called Phase 2 wireless implementation, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Senator Minnis. And that money, the other 35% of the 75 cents that's generated will be used to pay for not only local PSAPs to upgrade their technology to provide that automatic call locate for wireless technology, but also for the wireless community to be able to provide that technology to the local PSAPs.
What percentage is operating budget again?
Approximately 20%.
But what percentage of the 75 cents?
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis. 57.5%.
57.5% for operation. That's basically 20% of operations
at the local level.
And the difference is spent where?
35% of the revenues paid for the enhanced Phase 1 and Phase 2. We'll pay for Phase 2 wireless services.
0.5%?
Pardon?
The rest of it.
The rest of it, 4%, is the maximum that's currently allowed for Office of Emergency Management to pay for the state OEM program administration. They currently only use 3% of that. The rest of the money is circulated. The rest of that 1% is circulated back out to the local communities. 2.5% are distributed to an equipment replacement fund that cannot exceed $500,000 per year. And 1% of the revenue goes to the Department of Revenue to collect and distribute the tax.
Okay, hang on. I'm doing my math.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so 1% goes back to operations? We really have 58.5% that goes back to operations.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, yes, statutorily designated 57.5%. However, OEM does not use their 4%, so they use 3% and then circulate that back on a voluntary basis to the local PSAPs.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you.
I'll just assume responsibility. I'm in charge here. Nobody's worried.
Do we know if anybody keeps statistics on the 911 system so that we have some idea of what the track record is? My impression is the track record is very, very good, but seems to me like this is a government service that has been tremendously beneficial to the state. I just wondered if there is a statistic, are statistics kept, and do we know what the track record is?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, as far as statistics on number of seconds for call answering services and all of that, each local center would have those types of statistics. I can tell you that Oregon is a national leader in the 911 community. Oregon was the first state.
In terms of quickness of response.
First state west of the Mississippi to implement Phase 2 wireless enhanced technology, which just was deployed 2 weeks ago, maybe four weeks ago now, in Douglas and Josephine counties with Edge Wireless, who's partially owned by AT&T Wireless. It's my understanding that AT&T Wireless is also asking for Office of Emergency Management to implement that wireless technology in Multnomah County beginning in the fall, and Verizon is coming online shortly too.
I was wondering a kind of statistics that the public would appreciate, like, you know, lives saved, property values saved, things like that. Is there anybody that does that?
Senator Farioli, Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, not having a 911 her manager with me, it's a little difficult to try to answer that type of question on how many lives are saved. I know that the call centers do keep statistics on length of time it takes to answer a call, length of time that it takes to dispatch a call, and there are 56 primary public safety answering points in the state, so they would all have those statistics individually. There's not a central clearinghouse for those statistics.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Trotta, follow up on your line. Last legislative session, I think every member of the legislature had an invitation extended to go to a 911 call center and participate or at least observe in that mm-hmm. process. Right? Pretty darn exciting and pretty interesting. And, I think it's just incredible what is actually possible with the 911 system. We did learn during the Twin Tower attack that communication systems are not invulnerable, that even cellular opportunities drop to zero when the traffic explodes as it did along with that tragedy. And that it's possible that bandwidth and secure communications for police and fire may be the next permutation on the 911 system. If Oregon continues in its leadership role, we should be considering absolutely secure and non-competitional communications for police and fire. And I know they did have, the police in Portland had had some problems with cell tower conflict there, and areas were out dead spots. So we want to make sure the 911 system from civilians to emergency services work, and that communications for police and fire also. So that may be a future role for 911.
You might want to include hospitals on that, too, because they have certain situations that arise in the operating rooms and things like that where they need instantaneous advice. And
good point, Senator. Well, colleagues, we have in work session we have before us House Bill 4050, which extends the communication tax to fund the 911 system. If we have any other questions from the committee, otherwise the chair would entertain a motion to move 4050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Mayne?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 4050 to the floor of the Senate without amendment, a due pass recommendation.
The motion is to move House Bill 4050 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions to the motion? Any objections to the motion? So moved. Since Senator Minnis, you have a law enforcement role, would you consent to carry the bill?
Yes, sir. Okay. I think I carried it back in 91, too, or at least participated in it.
I will close the work session on House Bill 4050. We have before us House Bill 4052, and for the explanation, we'll bring Mr. Warner. Sir.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 4052 is the implementing statutory language to accompany H.J.R. 80. The bill, the substantive part of the bill gives the Treasurer flexibility in managing the Oregon Growth Account and the overall portfolio of the new Stability Fund in order to make the transfer to the State School Fund on May 1st. The rest of the bill largely changes the name Endowment Fund to Stability Fund throughout the statutes. There is an amendment, the Dash A2 amendments, which clarify a reference. And we have Cindy Hunt here from Council to address any questions the committee has on that, on the A2 amendment.
Committee members, any questions?
Mr. Chair, just a question about the use of the interest monies. The interest monies go to various grant proposals. Some of them also go to the Opportunity Grant. Students, as I recall our discussion last evening, one of the reasons we prefer transferring this money until the end of the biennium, basically the last quarter, is so that that money can stay in place and earn interest, and interest will be there to be given to those grant programs. Is that the case? There still would be some loss of that interest money because eventually it does go in the last quarter, but it's used. But there's an effort to maintain as much of that as possible.
Senator Shaw, that's correct. The measure refers to allocation of the interest earnings of the account as determined by law, and you can see that allocation is actually in the A2 amendments. 75% of those declared earnings go to the fund that is paying debt service on the school lottery bonds. 25% go to the scholarship commission. That statute would remain in place, so that would not be changed. The major impact on the earnings will be the transfer amount. And, of course, the more that is transferred to HJR 80, the smaller the interest earnings will be in the following financial year.
Senator, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Duke?
Question of Paul. This is bill number 2. Is there there's a third somewhere, and is there a fourth?
Senator Dukes, there's a series of bills in the committee that are linked to HJR 80. This one is the implementing statutory language, and you did not see a similar bill in the last special session because it was not operational until April 30th. We had anticipated developing a statutory implementing language in the early part of the regular session. HJR 80 has no operational date, so it will go into effect 30 days after the election, so this will accompany it. The other bills that are related, you also have on your agenda this morning, House Bill 4056, which authorizes the Treasurer to issue revenue bonds backed by the Master Settlement Agreement in the event that Measure 80 is defeated at the polls. So it's the so-called backup funding bill. And you'll have that on your agenda this morning. The other bill that's related is 4059, and that's the special elections bill, which contains the election dates, a ballot title for HJR 80, but also for House Bill 4051, which proposes an increase in the excise tax on cigarettes. So that one is not on your agenda this morning.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Colleagues, we have this House Bill 4052 A2 amendments that would be needed to be amended into the bill. And then,
does it make sense to have Legislative Council explain the amendment, since the amendment looks a little bizarre and people may not understand it?
That would not be the first bizarre amendment the committee has or will consider. The Hunt has moved diligently to the podium, and we will call on Ms. Hunt.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Counsel's Office. The amendment before you addresses an issue that I found as I was reviewing all of the statutes related to the Education Endowment Fund for purposes of drafting the implementing legislation. And that issue is that this amendment addresses, or amends rather, 348.716, which is the Oregon Education Fund statute, which this is the fund that the monies to pay back K-12 education bonds are funneled through. And I noticed reviewing this statute in comparison to 348.696, which is the main endowment fund statute, the two were not consistent with one another. And so to make the two statutes consistent with one another, I drafted the amendments before you. And so what these amendments do is more specifically reference a subsection in 348.696 that describes the earnings that go to the Oregon Education Fund. Generally speaking, it is 75% of the earnings. But in the last session, there were a couple of specialized funds, we'll call them, I guess, under the endowment fund that were created, one of which is the Higher Ed Tech Transfer Fund, and we have a direction in 348.696 that the earnings from the Oregon Growth Account are to go into that fund. Right now, I think that amount is zero, but in the future, it could be more significant. So the 75% does not include those earnings. The other exclusion is that there's also, what the 75% doesn't include is the earnings from the higher ed tech transfer account. Those go to the Department of Higher Education. It's my understanding, at least for this budget, there aren't any earnings there either, but eventually there could be. So what this amendment is doing is making the two statutes consistent with one another, and so that in the future there is not a question in this area about what exactly we mean as far as, you know, the earnings.
And as you look at that, the boldface type, which explains the amendment, it doesn't apply to everything in the paragraph under Section 8A. It's just one part of the paragraph.
Senator Trow, that's correct. It only applies to that little subsection being changed. And the reason for the date is that's the date. There's also two versions of 348-696, and the second version comes into play on that date, so that date is consistent with that other statute as well.
That helps.
Further questions for Ms. Hand? Hearing and seeing none. As I stated earlier, the chair would need an amendment to move the A2 amendments into 45th.
We're in work session.
We are in work session.
Okay, I'll move the A2 amendment.
A2 amendments.
4052.
All right. Senator Minnis has moved the A2 amendments to amend House Bill 4052. Any questions on the motion? Senator.
Just a statement, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate what you're trying to do here and understand it. HCR 80 is still not something I can support, and so the whole piece of moving it along and it is not something I'm going to support either. It has become a divisive thing in this chamber, and I think that's a shame, but also I don't think it's what the people were looking for. So I'm a no.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I see that Senator Minnis down there.
I'll be in also.
To say humorous a little bit, we might.
We're trying. We're trying.
Well, I appreciate the fact that we have a difference about this bill, and I think we should appreciate that. Often, I think the public sees the divisions in the body as being disruptive and wasteful. But in point of fact, we're supposed to disagree on lots of stuff while we're here, and we're supposed to contend about it. And it should be no mystery that there's a disagreement about how philosophies play themselves out in this building. In this instance, the chair did indicate, and I think with support of all the members, that we'd bring a package out of here, that all sort of a piece to support SJR 80, if that's what we were going to do, House Joint Resolution 80. This is part of that, as a good senator Dukes mentioned. There are four, I think, that are attending. Mm-hmm. I think we have, what, three of them in play now. Mm-hmm. But we have a motion on the floor, and if there's no further discussion, we'll just call for the question and ask for the roll to be called.
No.
Major.
Aye.
Hand.
Aye.
No. Aye. Motion passes, and House Bill 4052 has been amended to A2 amendments. We need a motion to move the bill to the floor of the due path.
So move.
Senator Fisher moves the amended version of House Bill 4050 to the floor of the due path recommendation. Are there any questions? And I assume there are objections, so we will call the roll.
Thank
you.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. The motion passes. Do I have a volunteer to carry this bill? And we've already given one to Senator Minnis.
Tell to you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Fisher. Senator Fisher will carry it.
I was going to jump up and volunteer, but I thought, well, maybe you wouldn't.
They might not appreciate your caring speech, Senator.
I remember Fadley gave one.
Well, I have seen folks. I've been assigned bills they actually voted no for. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I remember carrying the camera stoplight bill to the floor, which is a bill I hated and still hate.
It's been so long since I've been in the military, I forget you're not supposed to volunteer for it.
Well, actually, I appreciate it, Senator Fisher. And that closes the work session on House Bill 4052. we'll open the work session on House Bill 4056 with an explanation of the bill. So we are in work session on House Bill 4056.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, DeCase, Legislative Revenues. House Bill 4056 is operable only if HJR 80 is disapproved or not approved at the polls. And what this does is to provide the $220 million in funding through a different mechanism. And in particular, it is bonding master settlement agreements, revenues from the master settlement agreements. And so the bill sets up the provisions whereby the state treasurer and DAS may issue bonds in the eventuality that HJR 80 is not approved. So this bill would become effective essentially 30 days after the special election on September 17, 2002. Now, the bill in its engrossed version was reviewed by DAS, and they had some suggestions with respect to wording and some of the references in the bill. And so you have before you the A2 amendments to House Bill 4056. And these make some of those changes. They also make it clear that the amount that's involved here is $220 million, not $180 million, so that it is consistent with HJR 80. Most of the amendments are referential in nature, and we do have Harrison Conley from Council here if you want to go through those amendments.
Mr. Conley, please come forward. Thank you, Mr. Yates. Good morning.
Good morning. Harrison Conley, Office of Legislative Counsel.
Welcome.
Thank you. I guess I would draw your attention to probably four of the changes in particular, and one which I think we do have to count as a substantive change. So I'll start with that one, which is on the second page of this, line two. I think you've been told before that we've worked from the model Senate Bill 832, which related to OHSU bonds.
Right.
Well, in bumping heads with DOJ and DAS and Treasury, it became clear that there's no reference here to refunding bonds. And that's a policy choice that can be made, but I have to admit it's not one that we usually make. We usually give the Treasurer the opportunity to issue refunding bonds to recognize savings. Of course, the bond market is very variable, and we might very well get better terms and conditions next year than we get this year. So that is a substantive change to give the Treasurer the opportunity to recognize savings by refunding bonds. Mr. Yates indicated, we have a cooperative relationship here between DAS and Treasury. Treasury, of course, being headed by an elected official, and DAS being under the auspices of the governor. We had some references which sort of indicated that one agency or the other could direct the actions of another. And that really is not the case constitutionally or, I think, in reality. I think there is a cooperative relationship in which DAS requests that bonds be issued. The treasurer has some discretion in complying. The funds that are created to administer the bonds and to provide for debt service are continuously appropriated to DAS. The language previously said that they're continuously appropriated to DAS at the direction of the state treasurer to pay. So we've recognized that, in fact, I think what they're going to do is consult with the Treasury and not be directed by the Treasury to repay. So those are the kinds of things that are changed in this draft. Another issue we have here that DOJ raised, and this is going to be in line 7 on the first page. If you look at the language of 4056A, it authorizes the DOS or the Treasury to hire bond counsel as provided in a statute which gives the AG power to consent to that outside counsel. And there's a second subsequent reference to legal counsel, which looks like it takes it out of that DOJ consent. We've eliminated that second reference and clarified that bond or disclosure counsel as approved by DOJ is what we really have in mind as authorizing here. The last thing is something that DOJ mentioned, and you see it at the bottom of the page 1, lines 22 through 24. There is language in the bill that talks about impairing the obligations of the contracts created with bondholders. DOJ, we wanted to clarify that this is an unconstitutional impairment that we're agreeing not to do, and not some other kind of impairment that it might be misconstrued to be. Those are the only things that I feel that I need to say to you, and if you have other questions, happy to respond.
Oh, thank you.
A question from
is this a required act, this bonding, or is this a may?
Chair Ferrioli, Senator Fisher, the way that works is the Department of Administrative Services, which has programmatic responsibility, requests the treasurer to issue. We do have discretionary language that says the treasurer may issue. I believe that what we really have in mind there is that the treasurer collects various issues and has discretion to decide the timing of the issue and to group various bonding issues together to create a larger dollar denomination of bonds being issued at any one time. So there is some discretionary language there. I don't know that there is, in fact, a lot of discretion to just absolutely say, no, we will not issue the bond.
Senator Fisher, was your question aimed at the connection between the failure of HJR 80 and the issuance of these bonds?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Connolly, can you direct the committee's attention to a section that connects those two concepts?
Well, I guess I would direct you to, in that context, to section 9, which indicates when sections 1 to 8 of this bill become operative. And they become operative if HJR 80 is not approved by the people at a special election on September 17th. So, in fact, if bonds will be issued...
Section 9, page 5, in reference.
Yes, section 9, page 5, lines 41 to 44.
And then continuing on page 6.
And the second half says when they do become effective.
Yes, going over to page 3, to page 6, lines 1 through 3, they become operative 30 days after the election, at which HJR is not approved.
Senator Fisher, did that get at your question?
Yeah.
Any questions from the committee? Committee, our floor session starts at 10. It's now 5 after 10. So I'm going to go ahead and recess the committee, subject to the call of the chair. And we continuously through the day will recess subject to the call. Mr. Connolly, do you have any concluding remarks?
No, Senator. Thank you.
Mr. Connolly, I really appreciate your work on this bill and your lucid explanation of a complicated issue. Very much appreciated by the committee. We are in recess.
Yeah.